these are IMC CREM's International Business Students on Air.
Hello, hi to everyone. We're excited to welcome you all, our listeners, on this episode of IBE Podcast. We are Katarina and
Shara.
And we are tourism management graduates and active students of international business and economic diplomacy. And I don't know how about you, Shara, but for me, it was actually in our tourism program when we got first in touch with sustainable tourism development. How was it for you?
Yes, I have to say that was the first time I actually heard about it and we dig deep into the topic. So it all started in CREMS.
Yeah, it all started in CREMS in our tourism classes with Christian Baumgartner. But now with specializing in international economic relations, we had amazing examples from economic sustainable development, the economic part of it. And we were excited to take our passions further. And
exactly.
So this thing happened.
Yes. We have spent 3 beautiful months in Costa Rica and got to experience the number one sustainable country in the world on our own skin. It was wonderful. And this humble research of ours, of course, wouldn't have been possible without our interviewee, Rebecca, who is a local business owner in Costa Rica. And he provided us with really valuable insights from her daily life as a woman and a small business owner. And I have to say, we are really grateful for all the knowledge that has been shared with us. And we are even more delighted to share it with you.
As already introduced by Sara, back in Costa Rica, we have interviewed Rebecca. And she was talking about her perception of sustainable development and implementation of sustainable development goals. And we've done so since during our volunteering in Costa Rica, we found ourselves in situations where the country did not appear to be the same as it was presented to us back in the university lectures. And this is a common kind of image misconception, while to the outside world, Costa Rica is presented as an example, an achiever of sustainable development goals, world leader in sustainability as awarded by the UN and second most sustainable country in the world. However, the average small business owner is still struggling with implementations of these sustainable development goals. And in their today life, they are facing specific challenges, which we will dwell into deeper in this podcast. I would like to ask Shara to introduce the sustainable development goals, as some of our listeners may be curious, what are we actually talking about?
There are actually 17 sustainable development goals. Sometimes they are even called the global goals. To be precise, this is a collection of independent but interconnected goals which are carefully designed to give all of us on our planet a better future, with hundreds of targets and measurement indicators geared toward the date of 2030. Ambitious, right? But as ambitious as it sounds, these goals receive extensive criticism. Just an example, to pursue all the 17 goals, including their formulation, launch, and operating them, it would require $1.4 trillion a year, just in low and lower middle income countries, which Costa Rica is. That's a lot of money. So it's very unlikely that the national governments, even with the help of international organizations, could provide the amount to achieve these goals. Based on research, it has been shown that there is a need for collective cooperation and a very new innovative institutional structure that basically cuts through all the hierarchical structures where the national states are in the center. This has been happening in the past years. Very successful examples are the GAV Vaccine Alliance or the ISC International Solar Alliance and the UN Peacekeeping, where national governments are cooperating with the public and the private sector as well. So it is clear that the individual would be powerless in this situation, and we definitely need to bring people together to achieve these goals. So where does this passion for sustainable development come from, Katarina?
So to explain this well, and also to put our listeners into context, Costa Rica was not always the super sustainable paradise as it is advertised worldwide today. While everyone is talking about Costa Rica, how Costa Rica reforested the entire state area and even went beyond with their efforts and actually has more forests now and green areas than before. But behind these achievements actually lies the history of the country, dark history of the country, actually. And since we all learn from our mistakes, this is not a surprise. So the vast areas of the country were deforested. That's approximately accounts for 60% of native forest. And this was done so for in order to provide land for the cattle farming. This cattle farming was meant to provide many jobs, especially in the poorest areas of Costa Rica. However, this deforestation kind of backfired, since deforestation on such a scale is not really a sustainable way to any kind of production, any kind of sustainable environment development. And it obviously had a negative environmental impact, leading to warming and floods. Yeah, this industry was consequently abandoned, and people in the poorest areas of the country were once again left without jobs.
This is basically a picture book example of development dependency theory, right?
Yeah, kind of. Let's say it this way, exactly. So the large number of inhabitants find themselves in dependence on one industry, and therefore this number of inhabitants is vulnerable to shocks in that industry. And so this is what happened with Costa Rica. And since then, Costa Ricans successfully reversed the deforestation after the cattle farming was abandoned. And the wildlife came back, obviously, and thrived better than ever. And, what wildlife drives the tourism in Costa Rica. That's also why we've been here.
I can definitely agree to that.
And yeah, locals today kind of started to engage in business models that allow for better dispersion and more flexibility. And they moved mainly to tourism. If it's bananas, pineapples or cattle, all of them present shock-sensitive industries. And so small and medium-sized enterprises represent hope for a brighter and more economically sustainable future for many. Basically, sustainable development goals were given a lot of credits by local Costa Ricans, since the quality of their life considerably changed, risen over the past few decades. And one of the well-known examples is increase in literacy rates, where literacy rates is among the highest in the Central America, and population is also vastly bilingual, Spanish-English bilingual. And the gender equality was also moving into positive direction. Yeah, however, in this podcast, we will unfortunately not get the room to talk about all of the sustainable development goals, but we will rather focus on those that were highlighted by the previous research on small and medium-sized enterprises or on recurring issues that were highlighted by our interview partner, Rebecca.
My name is Rebecca Quiroz. I grew up in San Jose, in the big city. I took tropical biology in college in San Jose.
You have a biological station.
Mm-hmm.
And can you tell me more about this? What is it?
Well, we started with some platforms to put tents. We started working with tourism. Since the beginning, my idea has been to become a biological station. That's why the name. It haven't been easy either. Easy to contact the kind of clients that I want to bring, students, researchers, universities. I'm still working on that. I hope someday I can have some university or some organization that comes and stay here full time and have enough money to pay like private park rangers and make this like a protected area.
As previous research highlighted, there are problems in Costa Rica regarding decent work and economic growth. The country is failing to fulfill this goal. For example, first things first, the local labor skills and supplies are not sufficient enough to give businesses competitive advantage. And they lead to backward economic leakage effects, that is that locals don't benefit from locals. The money doesn't go back from locals to locals, but it goes to a third party. And
in this case, I think I would blame government and lack of incentives, because if you still need to buy from abroad or engage in international trade rather than buy locally, there's something wrong with it.
I have to agree. Let's see what Rebecca's opinion is.
So most of the people that you see working at the hotels with the best positions, they are not from here, because they have no opportunities to obtain a degree, to go to college, to to learn languages, you know, something that must be basic in this kind of areas that work with tourism is not, you know.
But then we have another problem. There is a lack of connective infrastructure which would actually help overcome distances. And this infrastructure is definitely missing in rural parts of Costa Rica. According to the place-blind approach, this would be the first crucial step in achieving development goals.
Do you just remember the times when you were traveling? I remember you were texting me, you were on your way from San Jose, and when you texted me, actually, how long does it take to reach Rebecca and her business premises to volunteer there? It was something insane. How about you tell us something from your travel experience?
Don't even tell me. First, you land in Costa Rica, then you have to overnight, then you have to take a bus from San Jose to another big hub, then you have to take another bus. And to reach this town, you need to take a boat for an hour. And then to actually reach Rebecca's business premises, you need to take a jeep or walk for 3 hours because, yeah, it's...
To us, it seems surreal, right? So you come outside of the city and you experience third world country.
Exactly. Exactly.
So I'm sure Rebecca has a lot to say on this topic too.
Well, if you have a car, if you're lucky enough to have a car, it will take at least 6 to 7 hours to get to San Jose. So it's a full day.
And as Katarina, you've said already, you talked about government support and incentives. And unfortunately, they are very limited in Costa Rica. And they barely provide support, or maybe they provide support when they're very worst off. But this leads to collaboration again, that there are NGOs or independent organizations who actually have some support for innovative businesses. And Rebecca has experience with some of them.
So the system is trying to help, but I think it's not really helping.
Not really helping. The question that you don't receive any governmental funds for this, you're doing this voluntarily.
No, especially now, like I said, government doesn't have money to pay their own employees. They won't pay us nothing. But we have been having meetings and talking with people from organizations. So there's money outside, there's money. One is supporting us, NAMAF Conservation. They are supporting us with food and gasoline. Mm-hmm. They have helped us. Recently, we got another meeting with Global Conservation. They just give $15,000 to another conservation area nearby, La Amistad. So we are hoping that after that meeting, we can obtain something. All the institutions are working independently too. That's a big problem.
I wanted to ask that.
Institutions are working independently, so the efforts are not getting united. Now that there's not enough money, of course, they cannot do much anymore. I think that if all institutions work together and put all the money, small kind of money that they have, they can do more than working independently. Mm. But that haven't been the situation.
Yeah. So, as we can see, there are challenges of decent economic growth, and they are giving a really hard time for small and medium business enterprise and business owners. But unfortunately, this is not the only sustainable development goal where Costa Rica needs to improve.
One of the further problems we've encountered was actually highlighted by our interview partner in the previous research, and that was a gender equality problem. The gender equality topic in Costa Rica was receiving a lot of attention, and the things had been getting exponentially better in the past few decades. But unfortunately, Costa Rica still often fits this narrative of male head of the family, and there are some challenges for Rebecca as well, especially when claiming her authority as a female business owner. And as she highlighted, there is often problems for girls from the area, and I would assume this would be true to any rural area of Costa Rica, to obtain a proper education, as women are also they're expected to be primarily a mother and to care about the household. And also resources for the education are very scarce. So Rebecca is herself educated only because she was lucky enough to be from San Jose, where education for girls is widely available.
think about that during your travels. Have you actually worked or met any enterprise where the owner or the boss female?
So witness that woman can have a lot of authority if she earns her respect in the community. But other than that, I wouldn't say it's so common from my own experience.
Yes, I have to say Rebecca was the only person, only woman.
Yeah,
I've met.
And I assume this is education to blame often. So since, yeah, as we said, Rebecca is highly educated because she's lucky to be from San Jose.
We started with this project. Of course, it haven't been easy because hunting, poaching, taking wood from the forest is something cultural, you know, mm-hmm. It's something traditional from the people. So it has been a whole process, you know, it has been very difficult, especially for a female, you know, to come here and tell them don't hunt anymore when they have hunt all their lives. You know, these kind of areas are still very chauvinist. Mm-hmm. So it has been especially difficult for me, being a female and being from outside and trying to bring the park rangers and the police to stop them.
So as Rebecca and Katarina also talked about, the quality of education, it also needs some improvement. According to the OECD, education in Costa Rica should be given a higher priority in public spending and policy. And it needs an extensive reform in quality assurance. Rebecca has two small children and she has an experience with the quality of education.
So that's something that I'm quite worried about, my kids, the education in this place. This is paradise. I love this place with all my heart. But education is not good enough.
It's good enough.
School, primary school, they are right now in the primary school. Well, that's fine because I can give them a little bit more in the house. But for high school, I think we have to move out of here somewhere. Mm. I still don't know where. Mm. I need to look something better for them because high school here is really, really basic. Really
basic. Okay.
Yeah.
Besides worrying about the education of her children, Rebecca and many other small and medium enterprise owners need to worry about the rather dysfunctioning institutions when it comes to peace and justice.
Exactly as highlighted also by Rebecca and also some of the business owners interviewed in the previous research, peace and justice and strong institutions is one of the sustainable goals that's been highlighted and that is highly problematic in Costa Rica too. I don't know how about you, Sara, but I have experienced a lot of shadow economy and a lot of a petty bribe and corruption. Do you have any interesting stories?
How many times I had to pay for things to get done more quickly, for example?
I had an experience, actually, like this shadow economy stuff. When you go and you search for an accommodation and all the beds are sold out already without getting any receipt, they let you sleep in a hammock on the terrace and you're just like, yeah, give me $10, you know, and we're fine. So that's been things like this happening to me on, I wouldn't say daily basis, but maybe weekly. But I think it also depends on your exposure. To get something done, you really need to kind of help it a little bit. You know, it's when the bureaucracy is overcomplicated. So highlighted by previous research, overcomplicated bureaucratic procedures kind of hinder the decision development of the and potential and the power of small and medium-sized enterprises. So things get done quicker with this petty corruption. You can't really act like you don't understand them because it makes perfect sense.
Yes.
And even though highlighted by Rebecca, there is a binding law in Costa Rica, but enforcement is often very poor.
So it's really difficult, you know, just to do something very
yes.
simple with the municipalidad.
Yes.
You need to take the boat and then to take a taxi to go to court, to go to the municipalidad.
Jesus.
Just to do something very, very simple.
Very simple.
Yeah. If you need to do something in the bank, it's the same. You have to. Right now, I got a problem with the car from the Guides Association, mm-hmm. and I have been calling, and they said, no, you have to go to some office. And I'm like, the nearest office is 2 hours from here.
Being presented with all of these problems and pitfalls of sustainable development goals and actually problems with achieving them, We've been wondering if there's anything that can be done to kind of improve day-to-day life of the small business owners in Costa Rica. We are, however, no experts, but we have taken a course on location analysis, and we've been presented with two main regional development policies. And frankly, discussing this, we couldn't agree on a single one.
For example, where the institution and the subsidiary cannot be set on a regional basis, I would go with the space-blind approach. So in that case, we could funnel funds into the infrastructure development, and it would just make it easier for people to actually access things.
I would agree with you, but I would argue that this approach is not complete, because you can't just make children travel to San Jose, which is still hours away. I acknowledge the necessity for improved mobility of people in Costa Rica, and also the approach I would have chosen, the place-based approach presented by OECD, also acknowledges the importance of mobility. That actually drives growth and economic development, and it's not to be forgotten or ignored. But if we want to develop and improve areas like education or small business support, or achieve development goal which actually specializes on peace and justice and on institutions, we need at least some kind of support in the given region.
I think a good mixture of both of it would be a nice solution.
Yeah, I would also say the combination of both of them. Collaborative government intervention is definitely necessary.
Because where people can't help themselves, then who will help them?